Lots of cars driving fast, speeding round the track. Nobody beeps cause he ain't got horns, but ain't got tires that fall apart. At least they've got the F1 club to cheer them all along, and putting all their antics in a podcast and a song. Podcast and a song.
Hooray! After the longest pause for breath in F1 club history. We've not had a podcast for quite some time, have we?
We haven't, no. This is because of the bus theory with you wait for one bus and suddenly three turn up at once.
Yeah.
Shock horror, three podcasts have turned up at once even though nobody was waiting for one.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of anti-bus theory or something, I don't know.
Yeah.
But we're back.
Yeah, we're back. Really. Valencia Grand Prix.
Yeah.
European. No one likes this Grand Prix. The drivers hate it, the public hate it. It's a very negative vibe all round, isn't it, when you watch it on TV?
I was anticipating something boring so much so that I even agreed to go out with my wife for somebody's birthday party halfway through, knowing that it was just going to dissolve into a boring race.
Mm.
How wrong I was.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was the most exciting Valencia Grand Prix on record by a considerable margin, I think.
I think the most exciting one this season as well, isn't it?
I think so. I mean, you look back through Valencia Grand Prix history, and the only exciting thing that's ever happened was Mark Webber doing the loop the loop.
That was incredible.
A couple of years back.
That was
And after
incredible.
That, nothing. But this year, full of surprises. Qualifying.
Why not?
So starting at the back of the grid, where Noreen Carter-Kane qualified Charles Peak.
Definitely worth the £150 they pay for him this season.
Yes, that was money well spent. And they also managed to out-qualify Timo Glock, who was busy throwing his guts up.
Interestingly, Webber was in 19th. He never made it out of Q1.
Yeah, he had all kinds of problems. I think it all started in the last practice session where his car was in numerous bits. And when it came to qualifying, I think they were still putting the car back together. And then he went to do his flying lap and the DRS wing wasn't working, mate. That was his excuse at the end.
Mm.
But it was interesting to see that a Red Bull without the DRS working is still faster than the slowest cars on the grid.
Yeah. You'd sort of hope so, wouldn't you?
But it was a good qualifying for Caterham, actually out-qualifying both Toro Rossos and a Red Bull on merit. So that was good for them.
Q2, two Ferraris.
Oh, yeah, neither of them made it out, did they?
Well, weird, isn't it?
Massa
must have loved it, because he must have been... See, I told you I wasn't that much worse than Fernando. It's got to look pretty good on him when Fernando's kind of that shockingly off the pace.
Yeah. No, luckily for Massa that Alonso was having an off day, but because it's like ridiculously close, the grid this year, you're talking about a few tenths of a second from like first down to like 15th. The actual difference between Massa and Alonso isn't as bad as the grid placings would normally make out. I mean, during the race, it's another story. We'll get onto that in a minute. That in qualifying trim, there's not that much in it. So it was quite a close run thing. But the sad and depressing fact about qualifying this time around, though, was that Sebastian Vettel was just obscenely fast.
I thought you were going to say was that Button made it through to Q3.
That deserved a lap of honour just for doing that, really, didn't he? But Button seemed to be gathering himself up a bit.
A bit, yeah.
Ninth? Are we celebrating a ninth place for Jensen
Button? Yeah. But he had Lewis's setup, didn't he, for this race?
Oh, really? I think that
was the thing. They just couldn't suss out what was going wrong with his setup, so they kind of went scratch that. Let's take Hamilton's, and that setup has been set up around Hamilton, so it suits him very well. But even with Hamilton's sort of front row setup,
still nowhere near.
Yeah,
he is looking like he's got the Jensen sad face on at the moment, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think he's sort of taking Massa's place. I was trying to think, because there was Magneto Massa, and he still is Magneto, but I was trying to think of one for Button, and I came up with Button dressed as Ham Milton.
Really good.
Button dressed as Ham.
We need to make a jingle for that.
Yeah, I think so. What else happening in the qualifying?
Hooray, Vettel on pole again. And given the Valencia history, after that, we're all expecting this to be another Vettel.
Yeah, by a clear country mile.
Yeah, but ooh, how wrong we were.
Shall we head over to the race?
Shall we? Yes. So this race was on the BBC.
It was.
Yes, thank God.
I was so wrapped up in my own little world, I didn't actually realise until you asked me if I was watching the race, and then I realised it was on the BBC and that I could watch it. But as I said, I'd already made arrangements to go out halfway through.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that was a bad move.
Well, I mean, for the first half, you'd have every right to think that, because it was another Valencia Grand Prix at that point. Nothing was going on. I mean, at the start, you had a bit of a tussle between Grosjean and Raikkonen that looked exciting, but then they all kind of settled down. There was a nice gaggle of cars lining up behind Schumacher at one point, and that was quite exciting to watch for a bit.
I have to say, going into this race, I tipped Grosjean to win. Yeah. I thought that he would be the eighth, different driver. I've really grown to like him.
He's getting better with every race, yeah, I think, at the moment. And it's only a matter of time before he finally gets a race victory. So good to see like someone that came into Formula 1 in 2009 and had the crap kicked out of him and had to go back to GP2 and then was amazing in GP2 in the years he went back. And playing the long ball game actually worked for someone, it looks like. I mean, he's certainly making Kimi look... Even though Kimi's outperformed him in the races, there's a lot of circumstances led to that.
I can't imagine him doing those interviews that we see so often with the drivers that should have won, that didn't won, that just have got the sulk on. I can't imagine Grosjean sulking.
No, I mean, whenever he's been interviewed, I think even the like interviews I saw of him after retiring there, he still had the kind of, he was on a half smile.
Yeah.
But he was still happy to be there.
Yeah, you know? No, absolutely. he will be there at some point. But I thought that he was definitely in with a chance of winning.
But for the first half, it was Vettel was just like racing away from the pack, and it was a bit...
That was an incredible lead in the first lap. I don't know, after the first couple of corners, his lead was just immense.
Yeah, it was a worrying vision of things to come. I hope this isn't the way it's going to be for the rest of the
season.
Yeah,
and in fact, I think they said on the second lap that he was 2 seconds a lap faster than Hamilton, who was in second, by the second lap.
I mean, it was a heavily revised Red Bull at this race. The whole rear end exhaust was completely reworked and some weird two-tier thing going on at the back. It was the most heavily revised car at that race. There's quite a few updates on a few of the cars. So I think McLaren are probably a little bit scared after that, because they didn't really show any real pace at the beginning of the race. Like, Lewis couldn't keep up. And I think initially his plan was to do some one-stop strategy thing, but then I think they quickly realised that wasn't going to happen. And Button was languishing away down in like 15th or so. He lost loads of pace off the start.
Yeah, absolutely. He was disappearing in the wrong direction.
At least they spared us the team radio this time.
The McLaren pit stop seemed to pick up on this race.
It was a record, wasn't it?
They had a 2.9, which I think was the stationary record.
Yeah.
And all the others were sort of checking in at about, I think, somewhere between 3.1 and 3.5, which compared to what they'd had recently, it was great. They were sort of back on form, or so we thought.
Yeah, it was during the safety car period, which was a result
lap of... Lap 28.
Yeah, result of Kovalainen and Jean-Éric Vergne.
That was some incredible debris that Vergne was splattering around the track.
Yeah, I was watching him like drive back to the pits, and I was just thinking, I've watched more F1 races than Jean-Éric Vergne, I think, because I know that this is not how you do it.
Good God. I've only been watching it for a couple of years, and I just thought, hang on a minute, surely that dude needs to just park his car somewhere.
Yeah, I would have loved to hear the team radio at that point, where they're just going, slow the... And the whole car's like... jiggling all over the place. It's like,
it was like a real, you know what, my race is fucked, so fuck the rest of the aisle.
Because when he pitted, even the mechanics, one of them, the lead mechanic was just like, forget it, this tool has ruined it. Yeah, I mean, Jean-Éric Vergne's been a bit kind of off the boil recently, and he was the more heavily tipped Red Bull driver. God, it's tough being a Red Bull driver at that level, though, because they just don't mind dishing out the sackings.
Yeah.
Probably both, they don't mind throwing people on the scrap heap like that.
So he basically sprayed the track with rubber and car stuff in general.
Yeah.
Safety car came out.
Hooray!
Yeah, hooray, absolutely. That was a marvellous moment. And then Hamilton came in and the McLaren team undid all that fantastic work.
Yeah.
Whoops.
I mean, it's a real sign of confidence when you've got two front jackmen, because you just know there's a good chance that the front two is going to mess up.
What was that all about?
Even...
was this some sort of sponsorship
competition
day out? Yeah, red letter day. Come and be our front jackman.
Yeah.
And then when it didn't work out after a couple of seconds, like, okay, let's let John the regular dude stand in now.
Jobs for interns.
Yeah, that was absolutely abysmal.
I'm not sure whether or not it was actually the dude's fault or whether or not the jack just busted.
Buckled. But like you say, weird that they'd have a backup.
It's good to have a spare, isn't it? That's ridiculous. But yeah, once again, even though McLaren can do the fastest pit stops, it seems I can only do it once.
Yeah.
Once that edit, it's just back, normal service resumes. So.
Yeah.
Loads of cars came in a pit, though, didn't they? At that point.
They did.
Was it Hamilton, Alonso, Grosjean, Raikkonen all came in? And then after the safety car period, it was an amazing overtake that I have to mention, when Alonso passed Grosjean.
That was amazing.
To get ahead of him.
That was ballsy and classy, just amazing.
Yeah, because a whole spate of action happened around this point, because Magneto Massa switched the magnets on again at this point and had a coming together with Kobayashi, which put Kobayashi out of the race. So good old Magneto doing it
again. Kobayashi had had a bit of a run-in with somebody else earlier on in the race as well, hadn't he?
Yeah, I think he was...
He was involved in the Senna spin, although it was Senna that picked up the drive-through penalty. That was quite remarkable, because I thought that was going to end Senna's race right there.
It was an amazing power slide, wasn't
it?
200 miles an hour going sideways.
And then just picked it up again. So Kobayashi had been on form, kind of getting involved with other people's drives that day. But that was the one that took him out. Magneto still got his magic magnetic touch.
Yeah, that was it was a beautiful moment. And he also got the obligatory shot of Rob Smedley with his head in his hands.
Poor old Rob.
That's another team radio edit that we'll never get to hear. Just
It's like
when he's not on the mic, radio I want to hear
that would
Rob
be
Smedley.
That would be an interesting feed, because from interviews that we've seen, I think on the BBC coverage, or maybe on the Sky coverage, interviews with Smedley, he seems like the boss out of those two. He's the guy wearing the trousers, very much so. And he seems like a man whose patience is really being tested with Massa.
They should definitely mic him up, shouldn't they? Just
that would be,
No.
Nice shot on the BBC coverage of the ballsy marshals. Oh, hold on. Wait a minute. What we haven't covered before this is Vettel.
Yes.
Yeah.
Punch the sky moment that we were all waiting for in this race.
Is he going slowly?
Yes, he is.
I predicted this would happen before the race. When I found out that Vettel was on pole, I predicted that his car would pack up like it was a few seasons back. Oh, I was so happy when it actually happened.
When the safety car came out, I was like, that's, you know, it was only a bit of debris on the track. I'm like, that's a fairly overzealous safety car, but I'll roll with it. Yeah, then the Vettel retiring, you put down to overheating under the safety car.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, that's what
I didn't actually catch it.
And now Red Bull have been saying, I think it was in the German media, that they feel like the safety car was deployed just to make the race more exciting.
I love the way that all the sort of darker, more sinister comments always are made to the German media. They're never made to the British press.
Sadly.
It's like, no one in England's going to understand what we're saying here.
Yeah,
so,
if I'm going to call people like vegetables, I'm going to do it in German. Yeah, that seems to be his way about doing things. And then it kind of got translated over and everyone's just been... He's not a good loser.
No.
When he was walking back to the pits and he was doing the... It's all half wave to the crowd, right?
To be fair, he did have such an incredible lead before that safety car came out. So you can sort of understand where he's coming from. But it's just so boring for us watching. Vettel, you know, opening up such a big gap like that. It's boring. So, as you were saying, that was the tipping point in the race, that safety car coming out, where it just got turned on its head and suddenly became an amazing race that was just edge of the seat.
Yeah, from that point onwards, it was just non-stop. I mean, shortly after that, we had Grosjean closing down Alonso, who was leading at this point. It's like it's only a matter of time before Grosjean makes this pass on Alonso, and then pop.
Bang. He conks out as well. That was what, an alternator or something
like
that?
Yeah, again, related to the overheating, the Renault engine thing. But you saying about Grosjean being like a nice guy underneath it all, and even when he did the most pathetic trying to be annoyed with the marshals thing I'd ever seen, because he coasted to a standstill. There were no marshals helping him, but he just kind of started waving his arms a bit, and then the camera cut away just as he decided to push his own car off.
I don't know if you noticed, but before that, when his car conked out and he's kind of hitting the paddles and hitting the buttons, kind of going, hold on, something's wrong here. When he realised that it conked out and his race was over, if it was someone like Alonso or Schumacher or someone, it would have been like fists or you know, Hamilton would have hit the steering wheel. But his left hand, I think, just sort of raised and went, and tapped the steering wheel. It's like, oh, bugger.
Oh, bother.
I'm tipping that man for some very good things. I hope that he goes far.
Well, I mean, he could still win the championship.
That would be amazing.
But that wasn't the end of the action. Oh, no. Hamilton's tyres started to run out rapidly, making him pretty much a sitting duck for anyone that was bearing down on him. So, first of all, Raikkonen
took him in lap 55.
Made pretty quick and easy work of him, whilst Coulthard was slating him for not being able to overtake people anymore, and then Raikkonen just...
Yeah, although, I mean, Hamilton looked, like you said, he looked like he was in real trouble at that point, but... He wasn't a man that wanted to give up easily, was he? Because then Maldonado...
And here we go, the Maldonado incident.
Much
debated. This is the thing with Maldonado, he's very fast, but also very stupid, it would seem. And it's going to be his undoing. Yeah. Had he not had these... What was it? I think there's three major Maldonado kind of faux pas that have written him off the list of ever driving anywhere serious at the moment. And that is when he drove into Lewis deliberately in Belgium last year after Lewis overtook him in the warm down lap during qualifying, I think it was. And Maldonado just like punted him off the track deliberately, according to Coulthard. And I believe him. Then there was the Monaco Grand Prix this year when he'd done the same thing to Perez and just chopped into him, which is a bit outrageous. And now we've got this moment.
And those sort of dirty moments also coupled with silly mistakes as well.
Yeah.
The problem with this was it looked like two drivers showing their aggressive style of driving going up against each other. But the problem was for Hamilton is that he was fighting a fight that he couldn't win ultimately.
Mm.
And we'd seen that with Raikkonen taking him beforehand. So, you know, Maldonado would have, I think he would have taken him no matter what.
Yeah.
But it was this dirty butt-munching style of his.
Yeah, it's terrible, isn't it? I mean, he was off the track. Lewis is on the track. And there's no defending from that point. I mean, if Lewis is guilty, because some people were saying like Lewis should have given him room, and maybe if it was Alonso in the car, they might have moved over, whatever. So if Lewis Hamilton is guilty of anything, it's of being a racing driver. So I felt it was very unfair on Lewis. I mean,
Maldonado was penalised for that.
He had a 20-second kind of post-race penalty.
But considering he wiped out another man's race in that manner, that penalty really was way too kind. When you think about Lewis with his back of the grid penalty.
Yeah, just for like what, stopping at the end of qualifying?
Wow, there were the details around that. But even so, you know, that was deemed as a grossly unfair penalty. And I think that this was a grossly unfair penalty for Maldonado. But the other way, I think he should have been penalised very heavily.
I wonder what's going on in the Williams camp at this moment. What do you do with this driver? Like, he's very quick, he's won a race.
And he's rich.
And yeah, and basically the whole team
is funded by
Venezuelan oil money, so they can't get rid of him. Senna is underperforming, and he's had some good races, but you know, you can tell he's a bit of an average person, and I think they'd probably get short of him if they couldn't put their third driver, Bottas, in the car, who during practice sessions looks like obscenely fast.
And the car is great now, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
really.
I've heard this in the commentary, but you wonder what Hamilton or Alonso would do in that car, because I think they'd probably be consistently in that kind of Lotus position, like third, fourth, or whatever. It seems like that car's good enough to do that. But in the hands of like a psycho that's just a dirty fighter and a dude that's, you know, the nephew of a great racing driver, not so good. Anyway, that's the Maldonado case as we see it, I suppose. And it still wasn't over yet. We've only got two laps to go now.
Yes. I just want to interject at this point because I noticed that Carter Kane got a drive-through for speeding in the pit lane. I don't know what lap that was. It just sort of appeared that he'd been given that drive-through. That's incredible, isn't it?
I know.
How do you speed in the pit lane these days? Because don't they have some sort of...
I think you still have to manually turn the limiter on.
Oh, okay. And it doesn't just happen when you cross the line. Right,
fair enough. So I think he just...
And do you think maybe their cars don't have those limiters?
Yeah, or there's some kind of latency.
They can't afford the limiter.
Yeah, or it's like you have to throw the anchor out or the brick tied to a piece of string, like when you come around the last corner. In some kind of vain hope that you will slow the car down.
But that's great because we love HRT, and that's the third time we've mentioned Carter Kane in this podcast.
Yes, well.
Each time deservedly so.
They're getting their money.
Well done, Lorraine. Yes, so anyway, with only, one, two laps to go?
Yeah, well, it was very exciting because suddenly we had the prospect of a Schumacher podium.
Yeah.
Looking very likely, even though we had Webber breathing down his neck.
Which was great for Webber because he'd come up from starting in 19th.
Yeah, and he was one of the dismissive crew at the beginning, going like, he can't overtake here, and it's going to be like...
Yeah.
And it's like, well, there's your fourth place, mate.
Yeah, little did he know.
Oh, it warmed my heart to see Schumacher up on that podium, even though I hated him during the 90s for winning everything in the same way we hate Vettel now. But good to see the old man up there. He's not my dad, but...
He came in third. Second, Raikkonen.
Raikkonen.
Which was great to see him on the podium.
Yeah.
Alonso, had a very emotional Alonso.
Yeah.
Won.
Good on Alonso. And I do hope he wins the championship this year.
Surely he's going to.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be amazing. It would just mark him out as a true, like, all-time great to win a championship in an average car.
I mean, he's looked so great, considering it was a real turd burger that they put him in at the beginning of the season.
It probably just, still is. If you look at Massa's kind of like race results.
Well, yes, absolutely. But like you say, you know, certainly in qualifying, he's not that much further behind Alonso. But Alonso just is a But he's a double world champion race driver, isn't he?
Yeah.
For starters, and Massa isn't.
Yeah.
But he's just looked consistent, professional, and just quite understated as well. He hasn't really made a kind of a big deal out of it, out of being in a terrible car.
Yeah, no, that's true. Even his driving style has become very understated, where somehow he always seems to, like, do the right thing. You know, it's just like when, you know, Alonso would not be punted out by Maldonado if he was... I'm pretty sure he'd be the kind of driver, like, yeah, well, you know, can't fight this the whole way.
Yeah.
And he also, he's great at playing the numbers game when it comes to points results. I think I might have mentioned this before on another podcast, but I remember halfway through the 2010 season, and he just said, yeah, if I end up third in every race for the rest of the season, I'll win the championship. And everyone was like, yeah, that's mental theory. But then he was. And now he's doing the same thing now. He's like, yep, long as I'm always third or fourth, every race, I'll win it.
Yeah.
So, and now he's got enough of a lead where it's kind of like a proper lead in the championship. I think it's 11 points in the lead, maybe. I might be wrong.
We'll go with 11.
Yeah, possibly. It might even be more than that. But I think I'm thinking of the points difference between him and Massa, because I think Massa's on 11 points and Alonso's on 111 points. So it's fairly significant.
Any more for the race?
I think that was pretty much it for the race. Let's talk about some F1 news. Today, this evening, there was a press conference in London for the unveiling of the London Grand Prix, which is possibly one of the more insane and surreal PR stunts that's been dreamt up by Bernie Ecclestone. Possibly is a diversionary tactic away from the troubles he's been having in the courts at the moment.
Maybe. And I just felt as well, being a man in his 80s, he's drawn up his bucket list and this is on it.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that as well is because he's offered to put his hand in his pocket for it and stump up the cash, which, considering the hardballing he gives all the other countries, all the other governments, when he puts up the prices, hoiks up the prices in for various Grand Prix, and he really hardballs them, to say for the London Grand Prix that he would actually stump up the cash is...
almost unbelievable.
Almost unbelievable. Yeah.
Oh, God. Well, incredibly, it's been featured quite heavily in the UK press, this London Grand Prix idea.
Mm. And the pictures look quite something.
Quite unbelievable, because
unbelievable is the word.
Completely made up.
It does look like a post-apocalyptic London in many ways.
Me and Wag have just watched the CGI footage of Lewis and Jensen driving around. The track does look fun.
Especially the bit where it goes down to a single lane.
Are they seriously think they're going to do this? It's hilarious. Imagine the first lap just going into that.
But I'm sure that I heard only a week or two back that they were considering a London Grand Prix, but using the existing Olympic Stadium out of Stratford, and that the cars would go into the stadium and that would be a part of the track.
Yeah.
And yet suddenly, well, not suddenly at all, because obviously there's this big promotional video we've just watched, but they're obviously not talking about that part of town at all, and talking about very much central London.
Yeah, the Olympics one was a funny one as well, because I'm not quite sure how all these buildings, purpose made for athletics and like outdoor activities, and they're going to tarmac all of that over for a Formula One race. I don't think that's going to happen either, quite frankly. And the other thing that struck me about this was, I wonder how the Spanish feel about a Spanish bank spending a fortune promoting a fictional race when their country's in financial collapse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, money well spent, Santander. Keep living the dream, because that's exactly what it is. Is there any actual seriousness in this story?
Well, they've gone to the effort of making this video, of presenting to... who are they presenting to this evening?
Oh,
London, Boris, the Queen, whoever.
Yeah, the homeless.
And the other thing is, they're saying, what, it would take pretty much a week or so, I guess, for them to sort of knock this up, knock it down, and have the Friday practice sessions and qualifying and the race. That's a 3-mile track.
Yeah.
That is central London, completely out for anybody but the people that are something to do with this race, for basically a whole week, isn't it?
I'm not denying though, it would be cool.
It would be amazing.
Especially the one lane bit you're talking about.
Totally.
They have done it in Singapore, haven't they? They've kind of made it a reality there. I think it's a slightly different case in London. I just think that the health and safety things would be through the roof. But they have had single seat racing on the streets in this country before. I read a thing today and it reminded me of when I was a kid that there used to be a street race in Birmingham called the Super Prix in the 80s, but it wasn't Formula One cars, it was, I think it was Formula 3, it was very impressive to watch back then. They had Porsche Super Cup, but the crash, when I think back to it, it was lethal because it was literally a bit of Armco barrier and then kids hanging over the sides of it. It was like cars.
Well, not only that, and not denying that Birmingham is a fairly major-ish city in the UK, but it's London. I mean, you would have to lock down London for all those days of setting up for this Grand Prix.
Yeah.
logistically, it would just be an absolute headache. And they're saying, what, it would be something like a 30, 35 million spend, and that they'd see, what, about 100 million back?
Is that something?
I think I read that somewhere. I hope it does happen.
Yeah.
I hope it does happen.
It's highly unlikely.
Yeah.
I mean, they tried to make a street race happen in Moscow recently, and that never came.
Again, that's the, you know, another capital city.
I mean, we're looking here at a picture of the McLarens racing outside Buckingham Palace. Do you reckon the Queen would have something to say about that as well?
Well, they're saying it wouldn't happen until probably the Queen's dead.
Oh, right.
Well, not in those words.
Is that what Bernie said?
No, but it says somewhere here that this wouldn't happen, obviously, because it is just a CGI video at the minute. This wouldn't be happening for sort of another, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or something.
Right.
Unless I've made that up, I don't think I have.
It's all made up, so it doesn't really matter.
So, okay, maybe the Queen wouldn't be dead, but maybe we'd have a very different Commander-in-Chief at that point.
Yeah. Oh, well, good luck.
Good luck.
Yeah.
It would be amazing. From us who live in London, we'd love to see it.
Yeah, and good luck in the courts, Bernie.
Yeah.
Because I think you're going to need it. One more bit of F1 news before we go for another month and a half. There was a little story about the journey home from the Valencia Grand Prix. It's a bit of a non-story, but it kind of caught my eye. And it amused me. A fun story? It's kind of a fun story. This is from the Daily Mail, so apologies. Formula One presenter Simon Lazenby had some explaining to do to his Sky Sports bosses for his alleged conduct on the EasyJet flight back to London from the European Grand Prix in Valencia. A BBC Grand Prix producer working on the corporation's rival coverage of the race posted a tweet claiming an unnamed TV presenter had been a loud drunk during the journey. And other F1 personnel on board the budget airline flight last night identified Lazenby as the target of the attack, describing his behaviour as obnoxious. The BBC's Richard Carr had tweeted, "Tedious delays on this EasyJet flight, enlivened by a loud drunk TV presenter. Fortunately not a BBC TV presenter though, I'll give you two guesses." So, that was the story. But I read a bit from another F1 journalist saying it wasn't Lazenby.
Kravitz?
Not Kravitz.
Good man.
A little bit of digging around the Wikipedia pages shows that another member of the Sky F1 team has a bit of a alcohol-riddled past.
Brundle?
Think more female.
No. Oh, you will, of course.
Yeah. She's got a drink driving conviction to her name. I think she was caught driving her Porsche whilst absolutely roasted off her tits around Belgravia or wherever it is she lives.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, this is alleged.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, wow. Was it that was holding up an EasyJet flight?
Done.
Off
dun,
her face drunk? I like to think so.
It's interesting, actually, you should mention that, because I hadn't thought about the fact that those two, the rival commentary teams and production teams, would get the same EasyJet flight back and there. And I wonder what the friendships are like between the two, especially so many from the BBC having flown the nest and gone over to Sky. Whether it's a little bit awkward, whether it's just kind of just taking it for what it is, just business, or whether actually there's some kind of deep scarrings and issues there.
I think initially the relationship was probably quite jolly, and now it's turning increasingly very sour.
Yeah.
Because the ratings between Sky and the BBC, when the race is on the BBC, there's barely anyone watching the Sky coverage, it would seem. I wonder if Brundle's thinking if this was such a good move, taking the money. Because, and I did suspect this would happen, is you get over Brundle not being there pretty quickly, because the racing is still there.
And the dynamic's still there.
Yeah, the dynamic's still there.
The dynamic's very much still there.
And I really rate Ben Edwards as a commentator. And I think him and Coulthard are as good as the Brundle pairing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I just wonder whether some of the BBC team are now thinking, some of the Sky team, rather, are now thinking, why does everyone hate us and not watch? And then I just think further down the line, is this doomed, this Sky thing?
Well, probably, because again, Bernie was saying what a great thing it was just a week or so back, wasn't he? And that how probably the BBC will drop it completely, how Sky is just kind of overperforming against his expectations and everything, how many people are watching it on Sky, although we do think that what he's confusing that with is people that are watching through a Sky box, watching it on the BBC, as opposed to people actually subscribing to Sky F1 HD.
Yeah.
It tends to be with Bernie that when he's being incredibly positive about something, that means it's doomed. And when he's telling
he
you that,
it.
And when he's telling you something's definitely not going to happen, it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So the fact he's been so over enthusiastic about the Sky thing leads me to think that it's a crock of shit.
Yeah, you could be onto something there, definitely. I just think like the shrinking viewing figures you're going to get on pay TV, if there was no BBC, would mean that all the sponsors would walk away. It's a dodgy path to be going down.
Yeah.
But anyway, I hold on to the maybe foolish belief that the BBC will win it back.
Yeah.
One day.
And in the meantime, what's next on the calendar?
Silverstone is up next.
Yeah, someone's going to Silverstone, aren't they?
That's right. I'm there on a mission to get some HRT merch. So I might report in live from the HRT.
Times two, please, my good man.
Yes, of course. So I might come in live from the HRT merch stand.
Excellent. Well, that's one of my twin daughters at 20 months screaming in the background. So
that must mean...
That's it from us.
That's it from us. And we'll see you after the Silverstone Grand Prix.
In 6 months.
Yes.
Have a good summer.
Bye.
Lots of cars driving fast, speeding round the track. Nobody beeps because he ain't got horns, but ain't got tyres that fall apart. At least they've got the F1 club to cheer them all along. And putting all their antics in a podcast and a song.